Welcome to Pod Sofa, a Lovecraft book club. This is a discussion episode wherein we talk about last episode's story, The Thing on the Doorstep, first published in the January 1937 issue of Weird Tales. Note, this episode discusses themes like misogyny, xenophobia, necromancy, and gender identity issues. So if you're likely to find such things upsetting, you should stop listening now. All right, so sound check done. And we're ready now to start podcasting while looking directly at each other.
This is uncomfortable.
It's comfortable for me. You're good looking.
Oh, thank you. You're cute too.
So, yeah, this is it's a Lovecraft podcast. We read Lovecraft. Well, I read Lovecraft. And then I discuss it with a special guest. And today's special guest...
It's a real change.
It's Claire Reynolds.
We're going to throw a wrench in the machine.
Well, I have to say that you are a fan favorite, Claire, because we got a letter. We got email about the podcast.
Was it from my parents?
No, it was not from your parents. It was from a stranger. It's from a stranger named Sean Patrick. And Sean Patrick said, good morning, which is incorrect because it's not morning.
Oh, God. So that's how we know it's a scam.
It's a scam. No, he actually read it at 9 in the morning. Good morning. I found the show after looking for something to supplement my Arkham card game. I've only read a couple Lovecraft stories, but I'm from Massachusetts, so it's something that a lot of local nerds are into. I really enjoy the show, and I had a good laugh listening to you and Claire, see, you're the only one who got named, talking about your experience playing the Arkham card game.
Doesn't really count.
Just wanted to drop a line and say that I really like the show, keep listening, and I say thank you, Sean Patrick.
Sean, I'm going to need you.
There's a hyphen.
Like John Paul?
Yeah, it's like John Paul.
What up, Big T? Stop.
John, you're great. Thank you.
Sean Patrick.
Sean Patrick. I'm sure he just really appreciates us shouting out his first and last name.
No. I have not even mentioned his last name. Tens of listeners.
That's his first name.
Yes.
Oh, I did not realize.
Sean hyphen Patrick wrote in saying that he likes the Arkham card game stuff. So, great. Thank you, Sean Patrick, for having the one. Well, I've had one other piece of feedback. But not over email, just from a kid that lives in our house, who said that when I'm reading the stories, I sound like Cecil from Welcome to Night Vale.
Listeners, guess who called me this weekend?
Which was like possibly the nicest thing he's ever said to me. So that was nice.
And now you have 10 more years of, or well, no, 16 more years of disdain.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So let's talk about this thing. This thing on the doorstep is what we read. Well, what I read and what you just read moments ago.
An Amazon package.
No, it wasn't. So yeah, I think last time we did like a little bit of a recap and then just started talking about it. So let's do it this time. So it opens up with a strong declaration that the narrator did not murder Edward Derby, even though no one asked.
So what? I know, he hasn't even been called in by the police, as near as I can tell.
No, I don't know. Like, it is, so, yeah, it starts off with, it is true I've sent 6 bullets to the head of my best friend, and yet I hope to shew by this statement that I am not his murderer.
So I say that I have not murdered Edward Derby.
Uh-huh.
I've definitely not murdered him.
Nope. If anyone asks you, I certainly didn't. See, that's... Okay, so I don't remember. Is it ever revealed... Let me look at the end here. Is it ever revealed who he's talking to? Or is he writing this down?
Is it a letter? I think so.
I don't know.
I think he's just...
I don't know what part we're supposed to play as the audience here.
Yeah. No, I don't know who he's talking to.
All right, well...
He's talking to me.
All I know is that he didn't murder him, because that's the story we got about his not murdering. He basically runs through the life of Edward Pickman Derby. Pickman? Where have we heard that before?
Pickman's model.
All right. So I don't know if, like, maybe they share, like, you know, at the time, the convention was to, you know, your mother's maiden name becomes your middle name. So I don't know. Maybe they share an ancestor. I have no idea. But Lovecraft sure likes that that Pikmin name. So he shows up. But anyway, this kid is much younger, 8 years younger than the narrator, and is super into horror stuff, and ends up falling in with, I don't know, with the mod crowd at Miskatonic. And that's where he meets Azaneth. Azaneth is a lady who is striking looking. And specifically, like, I guess he says at one point, like, yeah, she's good looking. I mean, kind of weird and bulgy in the eyes, but, uh-huh, but good looking. Yeah.
I was trying to picture what that would look like. I don't know.
I have no idea. And so this is a reference.
Maybe like, oh, God, what's her name from The Shining?
Oh, yeah. What's her name?
Oh, my God.
Yep. Not Sissy Spacek.
Nope.
The other one.
Shelley Duvall.
Shelley Duvall. Perfect. So, yeah, maybe like a very Shelley Duvall type. And it's explained through the story that this Azaneth character, she is from Innsmouth, which comes up obviously in other stories, most notably The Shadow Over Innsmouth, which is another Lovecraft story, which was published, written and published before this story. So these like references to Innsmouth probably make a ton more sense if you're already familiar with Shadow Over Innsmouth, which you are not because I haven't read it yet.
So where is Innsmouth supposed to be?
Oh, let me tell you.
Arkham is Providence.
Well, okay, so I don't think Arkham is Providence anymore. Okay. So, like, the layout of Arkham is definitely, like, based on Providence and, like, where Brown University is and, like, where the river is and everything. But where Arkham is located, as far as I know, like, it's kind of close to Innsmouth. It's kind of close to Dunwich. Mm-hmm. And a little bit far from Boston. Like, Boston is far enough away that they can, you know, have their own Harvards and okay. all that. That's a good question, though. So where's Arkham? I think the opinion of Lovecraft nerds around is that it's somewhere in, like, the middle of Essex County, Massachusetts. Innsmouth is often said to be like a pastiche of Newburyport, Massachusetts, which is on Massachusetts' North Shore. And so Arkham is like close to that. So like kind of smack in the middle of the state.
So there's no direct correlation. It's
between what?
I mean, it's not, he's not just basing it entirely on one city.
No, I mean, it's how, whatever the story needs, like Arkham will get. But yeah, like Arkham is definitely, like, the layout of Arkham is Providence, but, well, the location is...
The reason why I'm asking is because I was like,
somewhere in Massachusetts.
Innsmouth. Mm-hmm. Is that like, that's like their Shelbyville.
Yes.
To spring, you know, like, wow, he's really ripping on Innsmouth there.
He rips on Innsmouth a lot, and like all the good people of Arkham do, because they're fucking weird in Innsmouth. But they do, so like Innsmouth has this, so if you read Shadow Over Innsmouth, which is not this podcast, but probably some future podcast. It's much longer than this. And so that's why I haven't read it yet. But basically, Innsmouth is like this port town that like has interbred with these monsters from the ocean. That's like basically all you need to know. And there's this thing called the Innsmouth look, which is like these bulgy eyes and kind of fishy smell. And it's a whole thing, right? And this is all deeply explored in Innsmouth, but it's kind of a throwaway line. A couple times, like, I mean, it is brought up maybe 4 or 5 times in the story and thing on the doorstep of like, oh, and you know about how those Innsmouth people are. Like, that's pretty much the reference. And so, and I'm glad you brought it up because when I read this story, here's the micro story. Guy who's interested in the occult falls in with a bad crowd, meets a lady, marries her. Lady turns out to be a sorcerer, steals his body and kills him. All right. One of the themes in the story is that she, Azaneth, is not actually Azaneth, right? Like, it is, and it's described fairly early on, that she's not who she says she is. She's in fact housing the spirit of, what's his name?
Ephraim.
Ephraim. That's right. Ephraim White, who was a wizard and he died. But before he died, he had this kid named Azanith, and then Azanith like goes on, right? It's said over and over again that like Azanith like could be a pretty cool wizard if only she was born a man. And it was like, or well, only if she was like, see, that's the thing. Like only if she,
she just wanted to have been born a man is what she said.
She would prefer that.
Yeah.
And so, but like the problem Ephraim runs into, like as the spirit possessing Azanith, is that her brain isn't quite human, and that's like what's preventing him. Now, I have always read this through my whole life as like what Ephraim is saying is that like women are not entire, like complete humans. Like to be a full human, you have to be a man, which is how I've always read it up until now, because now I'm reading it as like, oh, the actual problem Ephraim is running into is that Azanith is like literally not 100% human. Because she's got like these fish monsters in her background, and that's what's holding her back. So like, full on 100% born in the USA humans, those are the ones that can do wizardry. It is not like the text is because she's part monster, she can't do wizardry. The subtext, I still think, is because she's a woman, she can't do wizardry.
So here's what the exact language is.
Yeah, you can read it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Her crowning rage, however, was that she was not a man, since she believed a male brain had certain unique and far-reaching cosmic powers. Given a man's brain, she declared, she could not only equal but surpass her father in mastery of unknown forces. So I kind of read that as like, well, now that we know she's actually her father in her body, I mean, you know, he's a chauvinist sorcerer who was
that's
like,
his thought. Yeah. It's like, oh, if only I had a man's brain instead of this stupid lady brain, yeah. I'd be able to do all my cool wizard powers. Well, see, and that's the thing. This is what so I'm going to just say Ephraim is wrong. It's not the male or femaleness of the brain. It's the fish monster part that's holding him back. Like, right. That is that.
Probably. Who knows? I mean, he's wrong about a lot of things.
I guess he's wrong about a lot of things. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, the subtext is misogyny. I've always just read the subtext as text. Like, that. What? Like, the text is also misogyny, which I guess it is.
I wasn't offended. It was just this particular character having, you know.
I think, I don't know, like, there's things to be, like, you could read this story now with, like, 2020 eyes, you know, knowing what we know about, like, transgender identity and, like, kind of lay that onto this. Like, I would love to see a panel in Necronomicon talking about, like, you know, gender issues in Lovecraft, and the story would be one of them, right? So...
I guess
so. Yay, not racist.
Yeah. Well, no, in that sense, it would make sense if you had a man who identified as a man, was born as a man, raised as a man, felt like a man, was then transferred into a woman's body. It would be very uncomfortable, and you would be like, "This is not.
This sucks.
Right?
This super sucks, and it's distracting. Yeah. And yeah. So okay. So H.P. Lovecraft. Transgender rights activists? Is that what we're landing on here?
Yeah, there's a shocking lack of racism.
I couldn't find any.
I
couldn't find any racism in this one. I thought the misogyny was pretty pronounced, and I've always like thought of this as like, oh, it's a misogyny story.
Really?
Yeah, I really have. Like, I've always read it as like, but for my cursed female brain, I could do cool wizardry.
I guess I didn't notice, I mean, not the whole time, but very much of the time you think it's her.
Yeah.
And then, so I thought, oh, well, she's very powerful.
Yeah, I guess Azanith doesn't really have a personality. Like, Azanith
herself is Ephraim at all. No. Yeah, well, I mean, talk of her is, but.
Yeah, like he poisoned her or something. Or no, he took over her brain and then poisoned his old man body.
Yeah.
And there was some squealing while that was happening. So she, So she got that way.
No, but okay. So I was when I was reading this, and I was like, man, Lovecraft sure does like to just give away the whole thing. And that was just more towards the beginning where, you know, you're starting to think, wait a minute. Okay. So, Derby is changing personality. And then I think, oh, I wonder if like they mentioned she has psychic powers or something. And it's like, maybe she's taking over his body. And then like, right after that, it's like, you know, well, he left, but then her face was still up in the, you know, it's
just like, yeah. I mean, it was pretty straightforward.
But then it takes a little while longer for it to, for you to figure out that it's not, you know, she's not even she. It's
sure. Yeah, that does. That's the double whammy.
Yeah.
So there's like, I think there's three like pretty good horror beats in this story. One, it's her dad is her, like she is her own dad. That's horrifying. He's taking over, like they are taking over after, what's his name?
Edward Derby.
Yeah, Edward Derby. Edward Pickman Derby.
Eddie D.
Yeah. that's his rap name.
Well, I feel like in today's world, I mean, okay, so he grows up wealthy. Mm-hmm. He's really creative.
And paunchy. Like, and he cannot get over how paunchy this guy is.
Oh, he's super brilliant. But yeah,
hella smart.
Bad math.
So I do think that, okay, yeah, so that's the second horror beat. And then the third horror beat is the thing at the doorstep, like where, I keep wanting to call him Pickman, but it's not. What's his name? I never remember. Derby. So Derby ends up back in his old corpsey body, or no, in her corpsey body, and then is basically a zombie.
Yeah.
Like a gross, icky, oozy zombie.
Can't talk.
Can dial a phone. Glub glub glub. Yeah.
Lengthy and well written set of instructions.
Right. Which he doesn't actually read the first time because he passes out.
He swoons.
And then he has to go back and read it later. But I don't know, maybe like his face. Well, I don't know. How did he kill her? He shot her, right?
What do you mean how did he kill her?
So how does Edward Derby in that brief period where he's in his body.
Is the body dead?
Yeah. Does he shoot her? Like, I think he shoots her. I
said he shot her, yeah.
So maybe he shoots her in the face, and that's why she can't talk anymore. Because, like, he shot her jaw off or something. I don't know. She's hella gross anyway. But I guess still fine in the... Yeah, and very stinky. Like, that comes up a lot. Now, I do think that, moving on to the character of Edward Derby...
Oh, no, he smashed her head in with a candlestick.
Well, that'll make it hard to talk, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, especially if you go in sideways.
God, she had been dead 3.5 months.
Yeah, she's been super dead for a while. In the cellar. In Massachusetts.
It's probably...
Yeah, but it's not like in the desert or anything. Like, it's still pretty wet.
No, but I'm just... Is it like, you know, that's where you keep...
I guess.
Vegetable, you know.
Yeah.
Things that you want to...
Here's the thing that just gives it away for me, that Edward Derby is another like autobiographical tragedy character for Lovecraft. You know, like,
was the part when he talks about what a genius he was?
He's a genius. In fact, he uses the term Poe-like, and like his relationship with his parents, it like kind of echoes Lovecraft's own relationship with his mother. So I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's particularly surprising. But this, and his cool friend, like, is one of Lovecraft's cool friends, you know? Like, oh, there was so I did a bunch of research. I fell down a rabbit hole. And this part of the podcast is now squarely in the Lovecraft Travel Agency. Because he goes to a place I've never been. And that is Chesuncook, Maine.
This definitely solidified my interest in visiting Maine.
Oh, let me tell you how hard we're going to visit Maine. So
just,
when we're allowed to visit places.
Yeah, exactly. No, but especially in the dead heat of summer is when I start thinking about.
Oh, wouldn't it be fun to be able to find forest? Like Clear Lakes. So I, you know, it never really occurred to me, like back when I read this, when I was a teenager, it's like, blah, 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 Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, all the same place.
But it wasn't.
No difference. When he gets the call from the sheriff in Maine, he's got to go up and grab his buddy, right? And his pal, Derby, shows up in this town called Chesuncook, which is, quote, close to the wildest, deepest, and least explored forest in Maine.
I heard that, and I was like, I want to go to there.
And it took a whole day of feverish jolting through fantastic, forbidding scenery to get there in a car. So I looked it up. Where is Chesuncook? Well, I will tell you. First off, I had to ask my friend, Bob Rudis, who lives in Maine, how to pronounce the county. Okay. So it's in... Piscataquis County, Maine. And he told me how to pronounce that. So thank you, Bob. Piscataquis County.
Piscataquis.
Piscataquis.
Okay,
yeah. And that is about 290 miles north of Newburyport, Massachusetts, which is where Innsmouth is, which is close to where Arkham is. So like call it like 300 miles. So if you're driving that in 1933, like before freeways, it would be possible to cover that in a day. You could cover that distance. If you figure like 35 miles an hour, you know, of an average speed, that'll take you about 8.5 hours to get all the way up there. And then that's
all green.
And it is in the middle of nowhere. So here's the thing. So Chesuncook Village, it has a really short Wikipedia entry, but it notably has this sentence. And here's why we're going. In addition to the Chesuncook Lake House, there are a series of smaller summer houses along the waterfront extending to the north toward Graveyard Point.
I'm looking at Graveyard Point right now on Google.
No, you're looking at the word Graveyard Point, but you won't see any pictures, for there are no photo. Oh, you found a photo of Graveyard Point.
This is Chesuncook Lake House and Cabin. So
okay, yeah. Point.
Oh, God, that water looks so cold.
So as far as I can tell, so there's a different Graveyard Point in Maine that's not this one that has a picture of a graveyard. I can find no picture of Graveyard Point, and when you look it up on Google Maps, like it's not there. There's none. So clearly, our mission is to get a picture of Graveyard Point, which is now fantastically more interesting than Chesuncook Village. But yeah, it's like it's a tiny little town. Thoreau wrote about it. Thoreau was there, so like other literary reasons to go to Chesuncook. So this podcast is not brought to you by the Chesuncook Tourist Board of Maine, because it itself is like 4 hours from like Bangor, Maine, you know, or Bangor, or however you're supposed to pronounce that.
It's actually pronounced Bangor.
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 Well, I'm looking at I don't see a graveyard here in Graveyard Point.
Oh, look at you. You found
I didn't look at the satellite.
Well, I'm sure that we're going to do some digging and we're going to find some awesome graves on someone else. Yeah, see that? That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, that's thrilling audio. So anyway, Lovecraft Travel Agency, going to Chesuncook. You cannot take a train there. You have to take a train to like if you were going to train any of it, you'd have to take a train to like, I don't know, Augusta or something is kind of close, and then drive another 3 hours. But yeah, it's all through woods. It's like, and so like, that's why I kind of don't get the description in the story of like, oh yeah, it's on the edge of the uncharted, you know, Maine woods. Like, no, it is in the middle of uncharted Maine woods. But anyway, near there, you can find some Shoggoths.
Okay, Canada.
You go to Canada. Quebec City is like 2 hours away.
It's Quebec.
Quebec.
Quebec City, thank you. So anyway, learn a new location that I've never been to that I got to go to as a Lovecraft nerd. Yeah. That's all my notes on this thing. Did you like the story at all?
I liked this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't.
It's pretty good.
It had a lady in it.
As a lady.
The lady's really a man. And
she's really a man, but like maybe don't, maybe not. Maybe she's just like a transgender hero that is also competent and capable and is good at driving.
But
like, it's interesting.
Driver.
She's got a high driving skill.
Why is that? Why is some old man
super would at like Packards?
No, I really enjoyed this one a lot.
The driving part, all the parts were like, you know, so it's a character point that Edward can't drive. And Azenith, actually Ephraim can. And drives like a crazy person, like drives super fast. And the driving does remind me of the driving elements in the new HBO show, Lovecraft Country, where there is notably like a silver Bentley, there's Woody, like there are cars as characters.
There's a lot of driving.
And in that, so like this is, I'm trying to think. I think there's some driving in Call of Cthulhu. I don't recall a lot of driving in Lovecraft, just because, I mean, it's pretty new-ish, I guess. I mean, these are all published in the 30s. One interesting thing about the publishing timeline for this thing. So this story was written in 1933. It was published in January of 1937, and Lovecraft died in March of 1937. So this would have been one of the, if not the last, like one of the last things that he would have seen published. I think there's a couple that's published after his death. And then there's all the posthumous collaborations that he was involved in, which are all not Lovecraft. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. But this may be, I looked around a little bit to look for, it's weird. Like you can find like written on dates mm-hmm. for these things, like really easily. Like there are a bunch of websites about them. But the publishing dates are harder to come by. You got to like look them up individually and who's got the time for that. So, if you know of a story that was published sometime after March or sometime between January and March of 1937, then that one almost certainly is going to be the last story that Lovecraft saw published. So there's that. That's all I have, I think, for Thing on the Doorstep, unless there's other elements you want to talk about, Claire, because we can. I mean, we didn't even Law and Order any of this.
Well, I mean, I was going to point out, again, this sounds like somebody trying to get out of a murder charge. You know, I mean, he's like, no.
Didn't murder
him. You didn't do it. It wasn't him that I murdered. It was, you know. But he did kind of skip over that. So it's like, he did skip over that. He mentions that he went there to the sanitarium, murdered Edward's body.
Mm-hmm.
But then goes into how Azenoth's corpse shows up on his front doorstep. But then doesn't talk about what happened in between Azenoth's corpse showing up and him murdering. Like, did he just...
Well, the corpse shows up, keeps staying. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he popped out that day.
And did he leave the corpse on the doorstep when... I mean...
The corpse, like, got all... It got all... Like, it all melted.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So, like, it was being held together, like, in this, like, semi-mummified state until Edward Derby started moving around again.
Came out of the cellar. You know, it's like dry or there. But yeah, it's just, it doesn't like, do you just walk in and then, what happened after he murdered, presumably, cold blooded, I mean, like to outsiders, it would look like he just walked in and cold blooded murder.
Oh, wait, it was the next day. Okay. So the next day in the afternoon, when I pulled out of my prostration.
Okay.
Prostration. And was able to walk and talk coherently. I went to the madhouse and shot him dead for Edward's and the world's sake.
Yeah. And then what? Did he immediately get arrested? I would have just...
But can I still be sure until he's cremated? So, like, he's still making these demands. I'm thinking he's in the madhouse at this point.
Well, he's certainly afraid that he's next.
I will not be driven out of my body. I will not change souls with that bullet-ridden lich in that madhouse.
No, I enjoyed this. It was cute.
What? I'm not cute.
Hey, man, it's okay to be cute. Everyone's got their thing.
It was enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the letter tells him to go to the sanitarium to kill it. So he does.
Yeah. Again, the very well written letter that's signed yours. Like he had time for his signature, you know, as his body is decaying around him.
When he gets I guess you can introduce this letter as evidence. Like, see, told me to. Just following orders. From a zombie that melted in my foyer. Like the butler, you know, kindly cleaned up.
His butler is. He's like, his butler basically wasn't fazed by this whole thing. He cleaned it up, got him to bed, took care of things. I'm like,
the butler is a high sanity ally. Is what I know. In Arkham horror terms.
I like to think
Sean Patrick, I'm talking to you. High sanity ally helps on, you know, like gives a bonus to cover ups, I guess.
I like to think the butler is Harvey Keitel's character in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah, it's the wolf. Yeah. It just shows up.
I mean, the butler's been there. The butler is actually a member of a secret order that has been fighting.
Like Twilight Dawn or whatever.
Yeah. He's been waiting this whole time. Mm-hmm. And the butler's like, it's not a problem.
Well, you know, the staff at Azaneth's place are also like,
well, there's fish, right?
They're fish lady. Well, yeah, I mean, but they're they're from Innsmouth, so maybe this butler is like has it in for Innsmouth people, and has been spending his life
just
as like as a fish hunter. Anyway, that was pretty silly. Also, I like that they celebrate Candlemas. Good for them.
Yeah. And Hallowmas.
Mm-hmm. Candlemas and Hallowmas. Yep. All right. Well, I guess that's it. This has been great. Thank you so much for finally deigning to sit with me, Claire.
Thank you for having me on the show, Todd.
Thank you. Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're always welcome here at, what's the name of this podcast? Podsophos, a Lovecraft book club. This has been Pod Sothoth, a Lovecraft book club, with your hosts, Todd Beardsley and Claire Reynolds. If you'd like to drop us a line like Sean Patrick did, you can do so by writing to us at hideous@podsothoth.club or by following us on Twitter @podsothoth, spelled just like it sounds. I'll be back next time for another story reading, and also with better microphones. Sorry for the crappy quality on Claire's voice work this time. I promise it'll be better next time.